Hi, everybody. Shavua Tov. This is Eve Harrow and Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Today is July 16th, 2017, the 22nd day of Tammuz, 5777. I hope you all had a beautiful, restful Shabbat. I know that I did. The news just before Shabbat was not great. The two Druze Magavnikim, the border policemen, Kamil Shnan and Hael Sitami, I hope I pronounced their names correctly, who were murdered on the Temple Mount in the course of their job, which a good part of it is actually to protect the Muslim worshipers, make sure everything goes smoothly as they go on Friday to pray on the Temple Mount, a place that Jews and Christians are not allowed to pray on. And that, of course, was taken advantage of, and they were murdered. I also know one of the paramedics who got up there, Aaron Adler, and he's really an outstanding paramedic from Magen David Adom. I've known him since he was a small boy. He's one of those people who's like was in and out of my house as a child, and it's wonderful to see the adult that he's become. But he was up there as a paramedic. He came up there to treat the wounded, and it turns out that one of the terrorists who they thought was neutralized and down was not, and got up with a knife and wanted to kill more people. And during the exchange of, during the hail of bullets, in order to make sure that he couldn't murder more people, Aaron was actually slightly injured. And it was a real miracle that it wasn't worse. Maybe a miracle of the Temple Mount. I don't know. But so first of all, my condolences to both these men. The Druze are a really interesting and important group here in Israel. Their religion is exactly 1,000 years old. It's somewhat of a secret religion. I don't know if it's any comfort to the families, but they believe very, very strongly in reincarnation. And perhaps that is some kind of nechama, some kind of condolences to the family that their loved ones at some point do come back. But in the meantime, for those who are left behind, Kamil was just about to get engaged. Hael had just become a father 3 weeks ago. And this is a group of people who have thrown in their lot with the Jews here in the land of Israel. Some of our bravest soldiers and, of course, bravest policemen, as we see, are from the Druze. And it's not something that we take for granted here. And our hearts hurt for them and for their loss and for the sacrifice that they made so that all the people of Israel of any religion can live here in freedom and in true peace. And unfortunately, that was taken away from them on Friday on the Temple Mount, a place that should be the exact opposite. It should be the House of Peace, the temples, Shlomo HaMelech, Solomon the King, who builds the first temple, the man of peace, Shalom, Shlomo. And that's why he's mandated to build the temple, and that's what it is supposed to be. But right now, we don't have the temple or very many rites up on the Temple Mount. And I think, you know, the last couple of weeks, one of the big issues that's been discussed is the issue of the Kotel and who should pray at the Kotel and how people should pray at the Kotel, if there should be mixed prayers or separate prayers. As was noted during the space that was left for mixed prayers on the 17th of Tammuz, which was last week, which commemorates really the beginning of the end of the destructions of the temple and the sieges around the city, there was nobody there. So it leads one to really ask the question again, if the whole fuss about praying at the Kotel is really in order to pray at the Kotel or to provoke. I know it's much more complicated than that. And I was a little disappointed, I have to say, in some of the reactions, even of people that I know quite well, who I think got a little bit hysterical, calling for certain kinds of boycotts against Israel, unless prayer is done the way certain people feel prayer should be done. I think there should be changes made. And I think that definitely Israel needs to accommodate as much as we possibly can people who have a different idea necessarily than the Orthodox way of doing it. I'm totally with that. But there are ways of react. There's ways of doing that. There's ways of reacting to that. And I actually found myself not as involved or even as opinionated as I can be, some of you might have noticed that, on the issue, because I keep going back to the idea that the Kotel should not be the focal point of our prayers. It should be the Temple Mount. The Kotel is a place where we were humiliated for 2,000 years. That's why it was called the Wailing Wall. And so, yes, the Kotel has an inherent spirituality or even holiness because of the connection to God that so many people have had there over the many years and all the prayers that were said, not just by Jews in this place. And when you're standing there, you know that the prayers of all Jews that are happening around the world at the time are whizzing over your head. But I think it is a tremendous mistake to allow ourselves to not be going after the real thing. And as I've said before, the temple is built on a threshing floor, and there's a meaning to that. Separate the wheat from the chaff. Understand where the real importance is and what isn't. And the Kotel is a supporting wall for the temple. It's not part of the temple. It's not even really part of the Temple Mount. And so while I have also had good experiences praying at the Kotel, I've also connected to God in different places, I, as well as my fellow hosts, but ha, guys, because I have the first show of the week, so I hope you weren't planning on quoting this. In any case, somebody sent us a Torah lesson, I suppose you'd call it, from a Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. I thank you so much for sending me this, and I'm just going to quote part of it about. Okay, they're talking about the idea of like what the essence of Judaism is. Okay. So just quoting a little bit of it. One of the most seminal Jewish thinkers in the post-medieval period was Rabbi Judah Lau, 1525 to 1609, known as the Maharal of Prague, and served as the chief rabbi of Prague. I was actually in his synagogue. That's also where they have the whole story about the golem, about the kind of magical, I suppose, figure, the big, I don't know if he's a monster, although any pictures that you've seen of him, he's not looking too good, made out of clay and protects the Jews. He's hidden in the attic. Anyhow, that's the synagogue of the Maharal of Prague. In any event, and it wasn't, and if you ever go to Prague, I know I'm interrupting myself, the reason that synagogues still stand in Prague is because that's where the Germans were going to have their last testament to the Jews that no longer existed. So they shipped a bunch of Judaica there, and they didn't destroy the synagogues there. So Prague was going to be that museum to the extinct people of Jews. So you can go there now, and it's so fascinating. And of course, we're nowhere near extinct. So anyway, back to this. One can be moved. What makes living a Jewish life unique is the unswerving commitment to live and breathe these truths day in and day out, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. One can be moved to tears by the notion of tikkun olam, of healing the world. One can become aflame with a burning passion towards the ideals of human dignity, love, and peace. One can be inspired to make a donation, give a speech, shed a tear, attend a rally, or write an article. But the real and ultimate power of Judaism is that it always inspired its people to cultivate their relationship with their souls and with God on a continuous basis every day of their lives. Judaism asks the human being to make daily sacrifices for truth, for love, for peace, for justice, for moral depth, for God. So during exciting days as well as monotonous days, on bright and bleak days, we are called to make a sacrifice to God. Judaism is not only about a moving Yom Kippur experience or an emotional memorial ceremony. It's something the Jew lives every moment of his life. It's the dedication of ordinary people to construct, through daily ordinary acts, a fragment of heaven on planet Earth. The mission statement of Judaism is that you are always an ambassador of the divine, an ambassador for love, light, and hope. When the sun rises and when your sun sets, you are God's agent here on earth to infuse it with meaning, purpose, and harmony, creating unity out of chaos, oneness out of fragmentation, light woven from the stuff of darkness. We may be having a good day or a bad day, be at peace or in the midst of a struggle, but we are, in the words of the Maharal and Eved Hashem, a messenger of God, a ray of infinity working for God, reflecting his oneness in the world you inhabit. So, wow, that is quite a mission statement, and that's quite an incredible thing to be a part of. So why am I bringing this up now? Because I think in general, in any relationship that we have, there are those really exciting moments, right? In our relationship with our spouse or our significant other, with our children or at work, you have these wow moments where everything just clicks and it was uber romantic, or you said something at a meeting that just blew everybody away and it's brilliance or whatever it is. But those are the rare moments in our lives. That's what makes them special. It's the everyday things. It's the everyday things in our marriage, the not exciting times, or in our work, where we have to like plod through. But that is in Judaism, that continuity and not the aha. That's what's really important. So wherever we go, be it at the Kotel or be it anywhere else, or on the Temple Mount when we hopefully soon can go, or should go, we can have these wow connections. But the difficulty is to bring it in to the not necessarily exciting times, just the mundane, and to bring that in. And so Judaism is a way of life. What that means is very individual in terms of how one decides to celebrate, because it really is a celebration, their Judaism, and how to focus their Jewish lives. But it really is something so much bigger than we are. And so I'm so grateful to be a part of that. But with that, we still have goals. And for me, one of the goals would be to get people to understand that the Kotel was the default mode, but now we have an opportunity for the real deal. And while some of us are pressuring our government and we don't understand why it is that Muslims have rights, the Waqf was given the rights on the Temple Mount, and the Jews don't have nearly the rights we have to, if we're going to pray, it has to be done sneakily and nobody can see us or nobody can hear us. And on any kind of a whim, we can be totally thrown off the Temple Mount as well, as happened just a few weeks ago, which Yishai Fleischer also spoke about on one of his shows. But it's only if people are willing to go up there, the government and definitely the religious leadership are not going to go out on a limb if they look around and nobody is behind them. So maybe this is a situation where, as a famous ex-president said, we need to lead from behind. But it needs to be the little people who set the stage. And then if there's enough pressure, then the leadership will change. But what happened on Friday, and death and terror that's brought to the Temple Mount, can never, ever happen again. And hopefully it won't. I had a conversation along those lines today, also talking about a Jewish way of life, with a young woman also whom I've known for virtually her whole life, who lost her father way too early a few months ago. And we were talking about the Jewish idea of mourning, because technically a lot of the halachot, a lot of the Jewish laws that have to do with mourning are minhag. They're not strict laws. They're more like traditions. And so, for example, it's the summer, and a lot of her friends are getting married, and including my son, and she's invited to the weddings, and she could go to the wedding if she's given a job at the wedding. So she's seen as an important part of the wedding. Then, even though she's in mourning for her father, she can go to the wedding. She was telling me that she doesn't want to do that. She can, according, get away with it, if you will, and be there. But her heart is telling her that as her last act but at least for this year, her act of respect towards her father is not to go, and not to go to these really Jewish places. It's just not in her heart right now to do that, even though very well-meaning folk are saying to her, your father wouldn't want you to be sad. He would want you to enjoy the weddings. And she knows that. But she said it's not about what he would want. It's about how she's feeling. And it brings me back to the thought that I'm sure I've talked about before, that very soon Shabbat, which is for me like just such an amazing 25 hours that I can't live without, very soon we will be able to keep Shabbat according to Jewish law, but lose the atmosphere. Right? There's computers and phones and all these things that will bypass the laws of what we have been told is building on Shabbat or creating on Shabbat, but will definitely, or even the self-driving cars that they're talking about now, but it'll definitely cause us to lose the atmosphere of Shabbat. And maybe this is a good thing. We're going to have to choose that even though it's allowed, we're not going to do it, because there's a bigger picture here. And that's what she was saying, that even though she's allowed to go to the weddings, there's a feeling here and there's an atmosphere that she has of heaviness and of sadness in her heart that's not going to get her to go there. And so these are choices that we all make, very, very personal choices that we all make. But it's definitely something to think about. And I think about this a lot. I'm heading into a week now, very busy guiding. I'm going to be with the Jewish Women's Renaissance Project starting on Monday. And, the tour guides there were educators on history, on Israel, and on how here in Israel, what's so magnificent about Israel is that you can live like really a full Jewish life just in every facet of your day, because you're speaking Hebrew and the calendar is a Jewish calendar and you're just surrounded. And in the land, there's just such a special feeling, and it makes living a Jewish life. It gives another dimension to what living a Jewish life is. And hopefully during the course of the week, they will realize the beauty of Judaism if it's not something that's yet a part of their lives, and want to bring a bit of that home with them, and to try and ensure at the very least that their children are Jews, and that this tradition that we've had for the last 3,500 years gets maintained, especially in a world where all too often Jews are choosing to leave Judaism because it's so easy, or because maybe they don't understand the preciousness of what we have. But before I go to them, last week, actually, it's very interesting, Butch, interrupting myself. On Shabbat, I end up spending a good part of Shabbat reading Makor Rishon. Makor Rishon is a wonderful newspaper. It's unfortunately only printed in Hebrew. I know that they're working on getting an English version out. And one of the columns, Shenbal's column, he on the 150th anniversary of Mark Twain coming to the Holy Land. And I hope all of you have read Innocence Abroad. If you haven't, I read it a long time ago. I should probably reread it. If you haven't, you should really read it. It's an excellent book. He comes as a Christian pilgrim to the Holy Land. And so there's a column in Makor Rishon that every week is there. The guy who's writing the column is retracing Mark Twain's steps. And every week he puts out a column about where he was that week. So a couple of weeks ago, he started off where Mark Twain started off, in the very north near Tel Dan. And last week he went to Nazareth, to the Church of the Annunciation. He went to Mount Tabor, to the Church of the Transfiguration. He wasn't too impressed with either, I think. And he also goes to different places along the way, which was interesting for me, because last week to prepare for a tour that I'm giving to Catholics in a couple of months, I also went to these places, and it was interesting that I was here following Mark Twain's footsteps. And the traffic in Nazareth is really, really bad. It's like impossible to find parking also. But it's 150 years later. Some of the things that he said still resonates. Like there were certain Arab villages he was driving through that he wasn't so sure they weren't going to get hit with stones because they were Christian pilgrims going through a Muslim village. And, you know, we still have that here. So today, what I was reading about where he went last week were places that, unfortunately, in 2005, Israel left as part of the expulsion from Gaza. We also left, and a lot of people don't remember this, a chunk of the northern Shomron. So four communities were destroyed there. And we left the Totan Valley. We left it, meaning it became Area A. It became an area that you can't go into. Israeli citizens can't go into anymore without special army permission, which this guy got. And I've been also, but it's a hassle to go. And I was going to go there this summer, like to Mount Eval, which is right next to Shechem. And where Joshua's altar, we think, was found a few years ago. And it's just, I couldn't be sure that the army would give us permission to go and would escort us. So I ended up canceling it because I didn't want anything to be left up in the air. But this week, that's where he was. He couldn't go to Jenin at all, but he did go to the Sebastia, the Shomron, which was the capital of the Northern Kingdom, a place that we left because as this stupid Oslo Accords. And so, of course, you can imagine what's going on there. It's an unbelievable archaeological site, such an important place. And we're not there and we're not watching over it. So things are getting stolen, garbage everywhere. And it's just really an absolute humiliation. And something really should be done about that. And also the Dotan Valley, where Joseph was thrown into a cistern, into a pit by his brothers, another place that we can only go to with army permission, so that he went there and they looked at the well and decided, you know, if that's actually the place. There's three different wells that were, well, it's not wells. It is actually cisterns. And the Torah makes that very clear, that he was thrown into a bor and that didn't have water in it, because it was also at the end of the summer when the cisterns are empty. So since a couple of them are wells, they can't be the place. But anyway, it was just really interesting to read about Mark Twain's journey to compare it to the situation today, and to also be upset that these are places that we had in our hands that were fought over and won in the Six-Day War at the cost of many Jewish lives, and that we've relinquished it, and not just from historical and archaeological perspective, but when we do that, then we humiliate ourselves in our enemies' eyes, because they can't imagine why anybody would do that. And you know what? They're right. So tomorrow, I am going to be taking a bus for One Israel Fund to Shiloh. I have a day of artists in Shiloh, because above all, it's about the people. And I've done this before, taking people to the homes of some of our really creative, such creativity in the hills. But even just in the area right around Shiloh, during the period of the Judges, was where the tabernacle was, where the Mishkan was. It was the center of our religious life here in the land of Israel. And there's a lot of really creative people there. So we're going to a glassblower and to a calligraphy artist and someone who makes flutes and ceramics and an artist who originally was from Russia. And they're going to tell us their stories and we're going to see their work. And that's another place, actually, that he talked about in his article, that Mark Twain went to Shiloh, but he wasn't very happy with what he saw there. And he fairly fast scooted down the road towards Jerusalem, which is going to be in next week's article. But meantime, I feel like what I do is to some degree, not closing circles, but continuing what other people have done, what other pilgrims have done here in Israel. And it's so different now in some ways, and it's still so the same in some ways. So that's going to be tomorrow's trip. I have two trips for One Israel Fund in August. And the reason that the flyers are not out for that yet, if some of you have gone on the website to sign up, had a little glitch in the August 7th flyer. The August 7th flyer is to the West. The trip that I planned for August 7th is to the Western Shomron. It was going to be to Mount Eval, and that's the one that I switched. And I sent in the text to the graphic designer. And the 7th of August also is Tu B'Av. It's, I suppose, Israel's Day of Love, you could say that. And so I put in the title, We Also Do Love. I had a little discussion with someone in the office about that, who said to me, no, that sounds too Christian. And I said, that's ridiculous. What, brotherly love is Christian? Like, we didn't come up with V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, that you should love your neighbor as yourself. So I'm glad the Christians adopted it too. Can't wait for the day when the Muslims make it part of what they do. But in the meantime, we can also talk about love and it doesn't have to look Christian. So I put that in there as the title. We Also Do Love. And for some reason, the graphic guy decided to, which is fine, he changed the title to Western Shomron, but he combined the We Also Do Love with my name. So when he sent me the flyer, it said, We Also Do Love with Eve Harrow. So I just started laughing because, you know, as much as I enjoy guiding, there are limits to what I'm going to do. So I sent it back with him, and that's for a little bit of an edit. And that's why it hasn't yet gone up on the website, but it should go up in a couple of days. So that's going to be August 7th in the Shomron, and August 30th, our annual wine tour in the Shomron to Har Bracha, Telon Moreh, to the wineries of Shiloh and also Gvaod and Givat Har'el. And that should be, it's always a great tour. It's at the peak of the harvest season. So we go into the vineyards and we see what's going on. And so in sending all the text in for that, for the flyer to come out for that and for the ad to be made so that we can advertise it, of course, what pops up, but the whole thing with Canada for 24 hours this week, where they decided that they were going to boycott wines coming from the Shomron, coming from occupied territory, right? So they were going to boycott the Shiloh and the Psagot wines. They reversed that 24 hours later. In the meantime, I put up a Facebook post about how I was particularly going to enjoy some of the Torah wines or some of the other wines from the Shomron on Shabbat, as we say in Israel, dafka, like specifically, although those are the wines that we drink anyway. And I ended that Facebook post with, the hypocrites can kiss my glass. So got a laugh out of a few people. But really, like, oh, God, like, I'm glad they reversed it. But this is where we are. This is the kind of thing that's going on in the world with everything else. This is what everybody's focusing on. That's a little bit obsessive and so wrong. But it leaves more of that wine for us. So if you're ready, if you're a wine drinker and you're not familiar with the wines of Judea and Samaria, get familiar with them. You're not going to have to choke it down for ideological reasons. You're going to love every drop. It's really special, and it fulfills the prophecy of Jeremiah that one day we will once again be planting vineyards in Samaria, and that's exactly what we're doing. So anyhow, I got to go. I got to get some rest before, because now it's very, very early on Sunday morning, and I'm putting out this podcast before I go to sleep because I got to be up early and get ready. It's going to be a busy week, and next Sunday, after I'm finished with my guiding, I fly off to Aspen, where I'm going to be with Itamar Marcus of the Palestine Media Watch one night at the Jewish Community Center on Tuesday, July 25th. So if you're anywhere in Colorado, come on by. I'm going to be speaking about the Israel that you don't hear in the Western media, and Itamar, of course, on the wonderful work that he does in exposing who the Palestinian Authority really are. And that what we're hoping for peace and for coexistence is not exactly what they are shooting for. And shooting would be the operative word. So have a wonderful week, everybody. Be in touch. Eve@thelandofisrael.com. Yeah, eve@thelandofisrael.com. Thanks again to Ben and to Tabitha and to everybody at the network. Take care, everybody. Love to hear from you. Goodbye for now.
Josh Haston here, host of Israel Uncensored on the Land of Israel Radio Network at thelandofisrael.com. Make sure you check out my show every Monday, bringing you the news unfiltered and uncensored, information that you are not getting anywhere else, especially not in the mainstream media.
Israel Uncensored with Josh Haston on the Land of Israel Network at thelandofisrael.com.